everybody doing out there? This is the T3 Sports Podcast. My name is Tyler Mason, joined by my wonderful co-host, Todd Kortemeyer. Todd, say hello to the people.
Hello, people.
This is our second podcast of the rebooted T3 Sports. We launched our initial podcast several years ago, and since relaunched it, same name and everything, a lot of the same topics. We'll talk mostly Twins baseball, but tonight we'll get into some other topics too. First, wanted to just kind of let everybody know where you can find us on social media and whatnot. You can find Todd at Word of Todd on Twitter. You can find me at TylerMason21 on Twitter. And you can also find T3 Sports on Twitter at T3 Sports. And if you want to send us an email for any particular reason, I don't know what that might be, but if you do, it's T3SportsRadio@gmail.com. Thanks in advance to everybody who tweeted at us for tonight's show. I threw out a question there on my Twitter account and asked people about the Minnesota Twins, which we'll be getting to here in just a minute. So thanks everybody who did submit some questions to that. We'll get to those pretty shortly here. Mm-hmm. Well, Todd, let's jump into it. The Minnesota Twins are closing in on the trade deadline. Currently at 50-43. We're recording this on Wednesday before Wednesday night's game in Anaheim. The trade deadline coming up, as I said, July 31st is the non-waiver deadline, and a lot of names have been thrown out there, rumors who the Twins might get, who they should trade for, all that kind of stuff. Let's just start out with, what do the Twins need to do? Obviously, we both agree, I think, that they're buyers at this point, but what's maybe the biggest area of concern or emphasis that they should put on the trade deadline?
I think at this point, especially with the way the second half has started out here, they need a little bit of pitching help. They definitely could use another arm in the bullpen, and they've got a couple holes in the outfield as well, in the infield, most notably a catcher and shortstop. I think those are more kind of ideal roles that they'd like to fill. But at the very least, they need to not be giving up runs late, and especially on those nights when the bats struggle like they have lately, they need to be in more games basically. And so I think if one thing they definitely have to do is pick up an arm.
Yeah, I think a bullpen arm is certainly a area of concern, or multiple arms. Maybe just looking at some of the tweets we received, Kirby Grutz, I don't know if I'm saying that right, said bullpen help is a must. Cindy said bullpen help. So that's kind of a theme here. A lot of people are saying bullpen. We saw last night's game, Kyle Gibson, not his usual sharp self. He's been one of the Twins' best pitchers as of late, but he gave up 6 runs last night. And Blaine Boyer comes in, gives up a home run. And Boyer, I think we talked about him last podcast too, is a guy that kind of was working with some smoke and mirrors early on in the season. And I think we're starting to see that kind of fade away. And we're finding out the real Blaine Boyer a little bit. Some of those other bullpen arms, they've kind of rotated some guys here. And I think, outside of Glenn Perkins and maybe Casey Fien, I don't know if there's anybody in that pen right now that I really trust a whole mm-hmm. heck of a lot. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, Blaine Boyer was a nice kind of run there. But, kind of seen, I think, enough now from him and the rest of the bullpen that these are not they're not going to be kind of shut down guys going forward. I mean, guys might, have a nice couple of games here and there, but contending, if you want to be a contending team, and if you really want to contend, which means not just eke out one of the two wild card spots, you're going to need somebody reliable back there more than like you said, just what we've seen so far.
Hey, look at some of the other bullpen arms. Fien and Perkins we mentioned, Boyer talked about, Brian Dunsing I think is a guy that's kind of just a guy at this point, a left-hander that's probably interchangeable. J.R. Graham, they're not getting rid of. He's a Rule 5 guy, so if they want to keep him for the future, he's got to stay on the roster for the whole year per the Rule 5 mm-hmm. stipulations. Ryan O'Rourke, a rookie who's come up, left-hander, he's been okay, but he hasn't really been in many high-leverage situations. So, kind of some inexperience there. I think they need maybe a proven reliever. That would be, I think we both agree, that would be probably the biggest pressing issue at this point.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, there are guys out there that we'll probably talk about in a little bit that could really help from an offensive perspective. But, like we mentioned, if you can get a guy who, if you've got a lead and it's, seventh or eighth inning and that he can get you some outs, then that just it does wonders for the whole team. It takes a lot of pressure off the rest of the guys. And I think even a short reliever, maybe even a setup guy would still, contribute an awful lot to kind of the, how games go on and how you finish out games.
And you mentioned the offense too, and this team really throughout the season haven't been able to figure out this offense. I mean, it seems like you know, they'll have stretches where they have struggled to score runs like they're currently in right now. You know, they scored one run the other night in Oakland in a 14-1 loss, and then you know, the next day they go out, or I guess 2 days later they had the off day Monday, get shut out 7-0. They get two hits against the Angels, and that's, you know, I think that's starting to be a bigger worry than, you know, maybe people thought earlier in the year. You know, Brian Dozier's carried this team as much as he could. Torrey Hunter, who just recently turned 40, has done his part. You know, but a lot of other guys in that lineup are not producing like they'd hoped. We talked last time about Danny Santana and Kenny Vargas kind of hitting the sophomore wall. Kurt Suzuki, an all-star last year, has really not hit at all. Joe Mauer is batting .276, and 6 home runs, 43 RBI. So he's probably below his standards too. You know, you look at some of the other guys just not producing, and I think when you look at the trade deadline, two of the names that we saw the most, I think, in the tweets, or a couple of them, one was Troy Tulowitzki, the shortstop from the Colorado Rockies. What do you think about, you know, if the Twins were to do something like that, would they have to give up the farm? Should they give up the farm? Or where do you sit on that?
Well, when you talk about a guy like Troy Tulowitzki.
And put aside your Padres' hatred for the Rockies.
Right.
And be unbiased here.
Right. You called me on that. I guess part of it depends on how desperate Colorado is to sell. I mean, Troy Tulowitzki is a guy who's making a lot of money, not just this year, but he's locked in for several years at, you know, $20 million plus a year.
Through 2020, I believe.
Yep. This is a guy who has, you know, rarely been healthy, save for maybe 2-3 years of his career, and a guy who is greatly helped out by playing at Coors Field. So he's not a guy that I think, and he's, I don't know, I don't have his exact age in front of me, but he's probably
30. He's 30, yep.
So I don't think it's a guy that I'm willing to, you know, part with a top prospect for. Certainly not somebody like Byron Buxton. I just don't think that he's going to, I mean, would he help the team? Absolutely, but
it's, but is it worth it is kind of the question.
Right. I don't think it would be worth it in the long run. I mean, obviously, shortstop is a position of need, and hopefully he would be healthy enough to fill that position for, you know, the rest of his career. But at this point, unless Colorado was willing to chip in a lot of his salary and, you know, maybe accept some lower tier prospects, which I doubt they would because they're not that motivated to sell him, but only in that kind of circumstance would I really consider it.
Yeah, the age and contract scares me. I mean, they're already giving a lot of money to Joe Mauer, $23 million a year. If you acquire Troy Tulowitzki in a trade, you're giving him $20 million a year right there. And two guys who are, you know, both over 30. Mauer, I think, is 32. Let me double check here.
Sounds,
yeah,
right.
Joe Mauer's 32. Troy Tulowitzki turns 31 in October. So these are guys that are probably at the, you know, end of their prime, I guess you could say. We've already seen maybe Mauer starting to kind of decline a little bit. And, you know, we see what happens with aging shortstops. Just take a look at Derek Jeter at the tail end of his career. I mean, how almost sad, I guess it was, to see just really how ineffective he was defensively and, you know, in a lot of ways offensively too. You worry about that with a guy like Troy Tulowitzki by the end of that deal. Like I said, it would run through 2020. There is a 2021 club option, according to Baseball Prospectus here, for that contract. So 5 more years, you know, until he's in his mid-30s for a shortstop. That worries me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And I just pulled up his career splits here. OPS at home, .956. OPS on the road is .819. Ooh. So about 140-point gap, you know, outside of Coors Field. Obviously, still, you know, .819 is nothing to sneeze at, but, you know, not the same player at all. And especially if you got one who's in decline, then I would be very wary of a deal like that.
Yeah, and I think shortstop is probably one of this team's biggest issues as far as defensively and, you know, just in the lineup. We saw Danny Santana last year. That hasn't quite worked out. You know, Jorge Polanco is a guy that they've had up for a brief stint. You know, I think they still think he could maybe have a chance at shortstop there. But really, otherwise, in the system, there's not a whole lot. You know, Nick Gordon, their draft pick from last year is a ways away, and he's even struggling in the minors too. So shortstop is an area of need. I just don't know if it's worth, you know, what they would give up to address that right now, or do you maybe gamble on one of these guys, Santana or whoever else, panning out, you know, down the road?
Yeah, I think you got to kind of just, you know, unless you get overwhelmed by a deal, I don't think it's something that you want to address through trade, at least not, you know, during the season here. You know, in the off season, you know, maybe we'll see what's out there. But I certainly wouldn't rush to make a move for a player like Troy Tulowitzki just if you're bent on winning this year. I'm not even sure that he'd really put the team over the top if you're talking again about seriously contending. I mean, if you're talking about winning one of the wild cards, then yeah, he's probably still a 4 or 5 WAR player. So he could potentially help you, you know, get one of those wild card spots. But even then, I think the risk is too great for the reward.
Yeah, I agree. And just looking at some of the other tweets here, Ryan Gilliland, again, I'm not 100% sure on these names. He says sell, which I don't buy. I think they should be buyers, no pun intended on that. Mm-hmm. And let me see here. Kirby Grutz, who we mentioned earlier, said don't trade away the future just to lose in the wild card and divisional round. And that kind of, he said leave shortstop and catcher, which we'll get to in a second, the same. It kind of gets to the point of what you said, you know, if they're just going to get that, you know, that one play, one game wild card, is it really worth it? Uh-huh. The catcher spot, though, is something that I think people have talked about as well. Kurt Suzuki not really producing much at all. He's not really throwing out many base runners after the year he had last year. Two names that have been thrown out there in trade rumors, and you'll hear a bunch of names from now until July 31st, and then even after that for the waiver trade deadline. Jonathan Lucroy of the Milwaukee Brewers, who I think would fetch a pretty penny in any kind of deal. And the other one that Twins fans are probably interested in, a guy named Anthony John Pierzynski. Might name right ring a bell. What do you think about either of those guys?
I think of the catchers who might be available, Lucroy is definitely going to give you the most, but of course, also going to cost the most, in terms of prospects and also in terms of salary, although it's not prohibitive. He's making $3 million this year, $4 million next year. Lucroy is going to be the guy that you'd really want to have, even though he's a little bit, down in numbers this year. Pierzynski would be interesting. Certainly has shown that he's still got a left in the tank. I mean, he's been kind of an ageless wonder over the last few years, and not making a whole lot of money. I guess the question there would be if he wants to come back here. I guess I wouldn't blame him if he didn't.
Sure. Fans of an exec have been kind to him here, yeah, for whatever reason.
Yeah, so I can understand, him maybe not wanting to come back here, but I certainly think that he would be an adequate fill-in. I mean, just about, I don't want to denigrate Kurt Suzuki too much. It seems like a good guy and a good guy in the clubhouse, but pretty much anybody would be an upgrade over Suzuki at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's been kind of odd to see how much of a downturn he's taken this year. My question with Lucroy is just whether the Brewers would be willing to give him up. He's a guy that has kind of developed into one of the faces of their franchise. They're going through a tough year here. Like you said, he is only signed through next season. He's got a 2017 option after that. But whether or not that would help the Twins in the short or long term, remains to be seen. Pierzynski actually intrigues me the more I think about it. And I'll admit, when he was with the Twins the first time, came up in 98, but his real kind of main years were 2001 through his final year in 2003 before he was traded to the Giants. I actually liked watching that guy play a lot, and he's I think he's the guy that if he's on your team, you love him, and if he's not, you absolutely hate him. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, Twins fans still boom when he comes to town, even though it's been over a decade since he last played here in Minnesota. Obviously, he was with the White Sox for a lot of years, in the division, that maybe that adds to the hatred a little bit. But for a 38-year-old catcher, I mean, he's still producing at a decent level. You look at his numbers, you're a big OPS guy, 748, maybe not great, but he's hitting 280. He's got 6 home runs, 30 RBI. Compared to Kurt Suzuki here, Kurt Suzuki's OPS is 584, which is one of the lowest on the team. He's got 26 RBI, batting only 225. So whatever numbers you want to look at, I think Pierzynski, at least this season, is a lot better than Suzuki. But the one issue I have there is, or maybe not an issue, but a concern or question, is how they would split that up, because Suzuki is a veteran, Pierzynski is a veteran. How would Suzuki handle that if they do go out and get him, unless he's dealt somewhere else, at some point along the trade deadline here? But that just seems like it could have potential for maybe some odd chemistry. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Yeah, I think that's true. And especially, I'm not sure how the pitching staff feels about Suzuki calling a game. I mean, we know from, his metrics that he's not a great pitch framer. He doesn't throw a lot of runners. So the numbers don't really help him out that much. But if you've got a pitching staff that's really comfortable with him, then there might be some unrest there if you make a move.
That's a good point, yeah.
I think that he himself probably understands how the game goes. He's been around the league a while. I think he'd be fine accepting a more limited role, and understands that it's a production-based industry and he hasn't produced. So I wouldn't worry as much about it from that perspective, but I would worry about the pitching staff. You know, it's always a little dicey when you change catchers.
Yeah, that's a point I didn't think about. And from everything when I covered the team and talked to the pitchers, they loved the way that he called games. And I think he was great working with those guys. And, you know, he and the pitching coach, whether it was Rick Anderson or Neil Allen now, and all the pitching staff, usually had a pretty, we're all on the same page together. And, you know, that is something to keep in mind, too. You know, Pierzynski is a veteran guy, like we said, maybe has his own ways of doing things. These pitchers don't know him at all. I'm trying to think if any of them would have crossed paths with him. Not that I can think of off the top of my head. But, yeah, that's, you know, that, you got to think of that chemistry, too. You know, I think regardless of how this team is doing on the field, I feel like they have pretty good chemistry off of it. And, you know, you can say what you want about that, but I think that's been a big difference for this team this year, has been that off-the-field chemistry. And you wonder if a trade like that maybe might, you know, shake the boat a little bit.
Yeah, especially a guy with a strong personality like Pierzynski. I don't know how well he and Torii Hunter even get along.
That's
for
true.
Example.
They're former teammates, but yeah, they might not like each other for all we know.
Mm-hmm. Very different kind of approaches to the game, shall we say. So I think it'd be interesting. He's definitely going to add an edge and a guy who's been there before. I mean, he's been on winning Twins teams. He won a World Series in Chicago. So he's been around the block. He could definitely contribute. You know, the teams that he played on here were, you know, probably the best Twins teams of this, you know, run.
Absolutely,
since the early 2000s. Yeah. I mean, since he's been gone, team hasn't won a playoff game.
Yeah.
So obviously the two aren't directly correlated, but you kind of wonder if maybe they're not missing that kind of edge.
Sure.
Know?
Well, and there's actually still I think it was an ESPN magazine cover with, I want to say it was Pierzynski, Torii Hunter, Jock Jones, and I'm blanking on who the fourth guy was. Oh, Doug Mankiewicz. That's who it was.
Oh, yeah.
There's that cover still in the dining room at Target Field, which I think you've probably seen it from time to time, too. And there's another tweet I saw from, I think it was X-Twins News, which is a pretty good follow. There's four guys from those early 2000s teams that were teammates, or maybe even it was into the late 90s, but it was David Ortiz, Torii Hunter, AJ Pierzynski, and again, I'm blanking on the fourth guy. Oh, LaTroy Hawkins, that's who it was. They were all teammates, I think it was 17 years ago, and they're all still in the league, which is hard to believe. I mean, LaTroy Hawkins is in his 40s. Torii Hunter just turned 40. Mm-hmm. Pierzynski, like I said, is 38. I'm not sure how old Big Poppy is, but he's getting up there too. So anyway, I thought that was kind of crazy that those guys are all still kicking and still producing to an extent.
Yeah, it's funny to think about because it seems like, you know, so long ago, and then these guys are still hanging around.
Yep.
And Mankiewicz is managing
Double A Chattanooga. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. He's managing all those top prospects. He managed Buxton and Sano earlier this year. You know, he's got Kenny Vargas on his team and Adam Brett Walker and some of those guys we've mentioned before. But just quickly here, I've lost my train of thought now. Oh, Roger Rabit, I guess, Roger_Goat on Twitter said, they need help now, not 8 or 10 days from now. These next games are pretty big, which is a good point. The Angels, you know, they have a couple more games against the Angels, then the Yankees come to town this weekend. You got to wonder if that comes into consideration at all. I mean, it takes two to tango with these deals, and you can't just force something if it's not there. But, you know, there's got to be a sense of urgency, I think, knowing that they're kind of skidding a little bit and the Royals, you know, continue to keep winning.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because do you wait about till the deadline and see what you have, or do you act first to try and avoid, you know, becoming a selling team?
Yeah.
And you know, we'll see which way Terry Ryan leans. My guess is that they're still going to try and wait it out and see, you know, what it looks like more closer to the deadline.
Sure.
But yeah, it is an interesting point that maybe, you know, why wait? Go act now. But
well,
all these guys are still in the
market. Terry Ryan's famous words last year when they went out and got Kendrys Morales was, why not us? You know, that was well before the deadline, of course. But
why not us? Why not
now? If they make a big deal for Tulowitzki, that might be he might repeat that again and say, why not us? You know, they're still in that second wild card spot behind Houston by game, but they have a two-game lead, it looks like. Let's see, yeah. Toronto was three games behind the Twins for that second wild card spot, and then Baltimore is 3.5 games. So you got some teams hanging around in that 3-5 game mix behind the Twins and the Astros. But, you know, if they I don't think they want to continue to just hang right there. I think they'd like to maybe put the foot on the gas a little bit. So
yeah,
it's a big stretch for them, and we'll see what happens here in the next week.
It's a very tough stretch. You know, obviously in Anaheim right now, they're about as hot as you can be in baseball.
Yeah. They have a pretty good player named Mike Trout, too, if you haven't heard of him.
Mm-hmm. He's decent.
He's okay.
And this young kid named Albert Pujols.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Prince Albert, I think they call him.
I do, at least. yeah, you don't want to, even if you're like, you know, still hanging around two or three games back, you don't want to be behind like four or five teams. You know, then you got so much more to overcome, even though it's a few games. You know, then you got so many more teams involved, and it's not a good situation.
Yeah, we'll continue to monitor the Twins' progress, I think, probably by our next podcast. Let's see, what's the date today? The 22nd. So our next podcast might be before the deadline, unless one of us gets traded by then. You never know.
But
we'll continue to watch that and see what happens with the local nine here as that July 31st trade deadline approaches. I want to get to what I guess some people might think is the A topic or the AP topic. Very funny. The Vikings.
I don't have a rim shot sounder I can play.
I know. We can maybe edit it in there or something. Vikings and Adrian Peterson announced, I believe, yesterday that they agreed to a contract restructuring. And, of course, over the last, I don't know, year or so or 10 months, however long it's been since the Adrian Peterson saga began, the whole contract dispute was a big deal among all this. And his agent, Ben Dogger, was very vocal. The Vikings kind of put their foot down and said, either you're playing here, you're not playing at all. Well, it sounds like now he's getting what he wanted, and the Vikings, I guess you could say they caved. You can weigh in on if you think that's the case or not, but it sounds like $20 million guaranteed for Mr. Peterson. You know, what do you make of all this? Is it worth getting all worked up about?
Well, it's just kind of, I think it's a little disappointing if you're a Vikings fan. I mean, you kind of want to, you know, it was great that they took the stance that they did. And even though, it took them a while eventually to do the right thing. But then throughout this whole process, like you said, Zimmer coming out and saying, he's going to play for us or he's not going to play. And now it's like, well, now we've made nice, we want you here. Football comes first. And so they give him, probably not exactly what he wanted. I mean, it's not, I'm sure not exactly the money that he was thinking of. But
let's be honest, he's not going to be hurting for money. I think he'll be just fine.
Right. That's exactly right, too. And so it's, I get it. It's a business. But it's just kind of a little disappointing to see, the team kind of, like you said, cave. I think they do cave a little bit,
yep.
Even though it's not like they're, handing him, everything he wants, but they worked with him on this, and it seems to me that after everything that went down, they say, okay, how about we play this year, we see what happens, you keep your head down, play well, do your job, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I think this whole dispute, if you want to call it that, kind of highlights the ridiculousness of the NFL contracts and the lack of guaranteed money in a lot of cases. I mean, you look at baseball contracts, we're talking about Joe Mauer making $23 million a year, that's all guaranteed, regardless of if he gets hurt or whatever might happen, that's guaranteed money. And in the NFL, these guys like Peterson who are or have been, essential to their team, maybe some of the top players on their teams aren't getting that guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. I think it kind of highlights that a little bit. And whether or not you think it's fair that he's not getting paid, now he will be getting that guaranteed money. And I think that was kind of the big hang up for him in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's right. The point he makes is correct.
Sure. Maybe the way he went about making the point wasn't the best way.
Right. And he's probably not the right person to make that
sure.
point. But yeah, it is pretty ridiculous how the way that NFL contracts are. I mean, it's almost like you should just make it like you just give a player however many millions of dollars to come to your organization, and then they're there for however long you want them there. I mean, that's basically how it works now.
Yep.
A 5-year, 7-year contract is completely meaningless. You can cut them anytime you don't
exactly.
train. So I can't think that the Players Association wants it that way, and I can't really think that the NFL wants it that way. It seems like there's a better solution.
Yeah, and whether this will change any of that, I guess I don't know. He's obviously a pretty high-profile player. It's been a high-profile story, I guess, just because of who he is and everything that happened with the child abuse and the fallout after that. So we'll see if that changes anything with the NFL Players Association or not. But regardless of the contract situation, I'm still not sure what to make of or what to expect from Adrian this year after sitting out almost a full year. Do you think he can be anywhere close to the running back we've seen over the last handful of years?
Well, if there's any guy who you think could do it, it'd probably be Adrian Peterson. I mean, he's other than, he's been sidelined for, some injuries, but he always seems to come back, better than before almost. And I'm not sure how he does it, but if he seems to keep himself in phenomenal shape, he seems extremely durable.
Yep.
And he seems,
I mean, he's a freak of nature.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Right. I mean, he's probably part robot. When he feels like it, he's certainly very dedicated to playing the game at a high level. And so I would be surprised if we didn't see him back at, you know, maybe not top form because he is 30.
Sure.
But certainly close to it.
But does sitting out a year, I mean, not having that year of tread on the tires, so to speak, does that maybe play into as if he'd be playing like a 29-year-old instead of a 30-year-old, you know?
It's an interesting question. I think maybe there might be some of that, but, you know, a year older is a year older. Sure. Even though you don't get the wear and tear, you know, you still – you know, still have Mother Nature to contend with. So I'm not sure you get too much.
I'm finding that out the hard way, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm only 28, but I'm finding that out the hard way that Mother Nature and time, and Father Time are not kind as you get older.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm speaking that language, absolutely.
Well, let's we'll probably get more, I'm sure, into more Vikings talk. They report to camp this weekend down in Mankato. I'm sure we'll get into more of that and kind of look ahead to that and some of the other NFL stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll get into some Chargers chat as we're both Chargers fans, and I may let you talk about Jay Cutler for 30 seconds or so at some point.
Oh, I got many more seconds. Well,
I know. I'm sure you could.
I'll give you my best.
You might
takes.
Have to make your own podcast just for your Jay Cutler love.
Okay. Yeah.
But
I'll do that.
Anyway,
no, listen to that.
We wanted to. I tweeted this one out too. I wanted to talk about game shows. Kind of off the track a little bit here from sports, but this was inspired over the weekend. I went to the Mall of America, and The Price is Right was having open auditions to try out for the show. And you get 30 seconds, and you basically you tell them why you want to be on The Price is Right. And, you know, this is a show I've watched growing up my whole life, 10 o'clock every day on CBS. You know, a lot of times if I was homesick from school or during the summer, I'd always turn it on. I even had a Price is Right board game. I mean, I was obsessed with it. You know, Bob Barker was my idol, all that kind of stuff, too. I knew all the games, I played along at home, all that kind of stuff. So it got me to thinking about game shows in general, and I thought it would be fun if we ranked our top three game shows of all time. And I know you said, did you come up with your third one? I know you're kind of on the fence about that.
Yeah, I went ahead and selected
okay.
one. Yeah,
let's go in reverse order here. Probably obvious what my number one is, but if you want to start with your number three and say what it is and why you like it.
Well, I want to give a couple honorable mentions first.
Okay, that's fair.
Because somebody tweeted this, and I didn't want to use it because they tweeted it, but it is a great point. Press Your Luck is one of the best
I have to admit, I don't think I've ever seen that. I don't know what that is.
Well, catch it. They show it still on Game Show Network.
Okay.
It's worth catching. There's a big board, and it lights up at random places, and then you have to stop it. And so it'll like land on a square.
Okay.
And sometimes it'll be like a dollar amount. Sometimes it'll be what's called a whammy, where it like takes all your money away.
Okay.
And there's actually a really interesting, this is getting way off topic, but
that's
there's
okay.
a really great documentary about this guy that like figured out like how the board worked so he could stop it like at will.
Oh, wow.
And like never hit a whammy or anything. I don't remember what it's called, but if you Google Press Your Luck documentary,
okay,
it's probably under that. So my third one, I'm gonna go. I struggle with the rankings, but I'm gonna go with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire at number three.
That's a good. In its prime, that was a great show.
Yep, I mean it was must see TV, and I love
Absolutely.
Trivia. You love trivia,
yeah.
So I always, you know, enjoyed playing along. And
what was the original host name? Do you remember?
It was Regis Philbin.
Well, Regis. I was thinking of the British woman because wasn't Regis was Regis first and then the British woman.
I think you're thinking of The Weakest Link.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which is
I don't know why I'm thinking of that
also
one.
An elite
yep,
game
that's
show.
That's a good one, too. Okay, uh-huh. Regis, of course. Duh.
Yep. Yep, Regis, and then now, I don't know if it's still on. They had, like, a daytime
Nerd
version.
Nerd of Fiera hosted it for a while,
yep.
right?
Yeah. So if it's still on, I think she's still the host, but I'm
okay.
not sure if they're still doing that.
I can't say
not.
I've watched it in a while, but
yeah,
that's a good one, though. And yeah, and it's prime. That was really good.
Mm-hmm. I still remember the first guy who won the $1 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't he called his dad to say that he's just won $1 million because he
yep.
knew the answer. That was
yep.
he used his phone a friend or whatever. That was brilliant.
Yeah, that was a power move right there. That was like, you know, forget your lifelines.
Yeah. Well, my number three, kind of a standard, I'm sure a lot of people might have it on their list. Wheel of Fortune. It's an oldie but a goodie.
Yep.
I mean it's hard to not have that. I don't know, a friend of mine, Dana Wessel, is obsessed with The Price is Right. With the Wheel of Fortune. I just gave away one of my answers here. The Wheel of Fortune. You know, it's fun to play along. You guess, see if you can guess it before the people in the actually playing the game do. And a lot of the times they come up with ridiculous answers. I was actually watching this the other day, and some woman, there was letters on the board, and she guessed a letter that was already on the board, and she spun the wheel, so it was a dollar amount, and then she guessed a vowel that was already on the board. So it was a double strike right there. I was thinking to myself, come on, where do they find these people? But Wheel of Fortune is my number three.
Yeah, some of those, you can find some really great YouTube videos of really embarrassing moments on Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, well, a lot of game shows. One that I don't have, and I don't know if you have it on your list or not, but I apologize, but Family Feud, which It's kind of hokey, but I get a kick out of the reruns with Steve Harvey. Mm-hmm. There's some good outtakes of those with some of the inappropriate stuff that or inadvertent inappropriate stuff that people throw out there. But that's I don't know. I find that kind of entertaining.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you number two?
Wheel of Fortune actually was my number two.
Okay, all right.
If I had to name another one, this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Well, you can have the same one. I mean, that's fine, but go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I did want to bring up Supermarket Sweep.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
Tyler Mason and I are members of the David Ruprecht fan club,
who
is
right.
the host of Supermarket Sweep.
That's impressive you remember his name.
Yeah. We've yet to reap any benefits of that.
No, we haven't gotten any emails lately from the newsletter or anything.
Right.
Oh, man, I wish I would have thought of that, because that's definitely, if it's not in my top three, it's an honorable mention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did want to bring that one up as well.
But why wheel for you, number two?
I love words, so I like trying to guess it when there's like only a few letters on the board. My wife can attest; her family was wowed by my Wheel of Fortune skills. Not to toot my own horn, but I like kind of figuring out seeing like two letters in combo and figuring out there's only so many words that could be.
Sure.
And then like the final, I don't know what they call it, the bonus round.
Yeah.
That's so much pressure, like watching people try and
stressful.
Get that.
To think about which letters you want to. I never know which ones I'd pick for that. They give you the standard letters, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which ones are best. I'm sure there's some type of math behind it of which letters occur most commonly, and but I don't know.
Well, because they give you the RSTLNE, because I assume those are like the most common, probably.
Yeah.
So then there must be like four that are the next most common.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
So that'd probably be a good thing to look up if you go on the show. But then with my luck, it'd have three X's in it or something.
I had Wheel as my original number two. I changed it to number three so I could put Most Extreme Elimination Challenge as my number two. If you don't know what that is, I think it's a Japanese show, right? Or Japanese, I believe.
So it's originally a Japanese show that then is dubbed
in English.
In English.
Yeah, and it ran on Spike for a long time, I believe, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it was just the most ridiculous games. There was a lot of like physical challenge type stuff. It wasn't as much word games or anything like that, or skill-based stuff. It was they had to run up a hill, and there was big boulders coming at them. And I can't even remember now most of the games. It's been a while since I've watched it, but the craziness of the games themselves were entertaining enough. And then when they dubbed the English in, and they had the crazy hosts, I think one of them was Kenny. I don't remember. They might have both been Kenny. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, I always got a kick out of that. I would watch that all the time, and I would just crack up laughing. So I haven't seen it in a while, and I don't even know if they run the reruns of it or anything anymore. But if they do, I got to find them. But Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, otherwise known as MXC, is my all-time number two.
Yeah, that's a great one. We just happened to get a tweet contribution, which is amazing because this isn't a live program.
No.
This person just has great timing. Kyle Brager says, "Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? The best game show.
I remember that game show. Yeah. That was more like a kids show kind of, or a kids game show.
Yeah. Kind of like 10, 12 years old. I think I watched it. Geography.
Sure.
It was on PBS. I always wanted to be on it.
Geography was on my strong suit. I don't think I would have done all that well, but I do remember that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The theme song and everything.
Yep. I remember they always had on those kids shows, they'd always give you a prize, no matter what.
Like a keyboard or there's a bunch of Nickelodeon ones that had just awful prizes looking back, and they probably cost $20. But. Mm-hmm.
Well, this was PBS show, so like third place I think got one encyclopedia book or something. Really bad.
Yeah.
We're on number one.
Oh yeah, we are on number one. Do you want to go first, or you want me to go first? Mine's kind of obvious, so I'll go first, and then I'll let you say yours, because I think everybody knows what mine is. But it is The Price is Right. Mm-hmm. It's been on my bucket list ever since I've been watching it, to be on that show, just to go down to California. I've had dreams of road tripping down there with friends and standing in line to get tickets and just hoping my name gets called, even if you didn't get called up, just to see it there.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do it when Bob Barker was still the host. Obviously, that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. How old is he? Does he have health concerns or anything? He's got to be up there in years.
He's super old.
Yeah, he was old 10 years ago when he was still doing the show.
Right.
But
I think he's doing
well. He
all
and Adam Sandler just did that video recently, kind of spinning off off of Happy Gilmore. And he looked like he's seen better days. I'm sure he's had some plastic surgery still, but it was a pretty funny video. But anyway, Price is Right, whether it's Plinko, I'm trying to think of the other games. Hole in One or Two, I always thought it would be okay, because it's a little putt-putt golf thing. Punch a Bunch or whatever that one is, where you punch
the
holes.
Punch Board.
Punch Board, yeah. Yep. I mean, there's so many good games. The Yodeling one. I always thought that one was hard. Yeah, they do that at Twins games now with some trivia.
Yeah.
They've adapted that.
That one was always so soul-crushing when, like, the guy just keeps going up.
You just wait for it. You just say, no, come on. But, yeah, I mean, there's just so many different games, and the bidding at the beginning is always entertaining for me. I always play, I'm a huge nerd. I play along at home. I yell it out even if I'm just watching by myself. But mm-hmm. Price is Right, if I were ever to have the chance to be on it, let alone just go to it and see it, would be one of the highlights of my life,
mm-hmm.
However sad that might be.
Bob Barker, 91.
Wow, 91.
And the picture on his Wikipedia page is him guest hosting WWE Raw in 2009.
Oh, wow.
So try and find some video of that one.
Yeah, that'd be entertaining.
So my number one, and I probably should have put Price is Right in the top three in retrospect, but...
Wow, so I thought your number one might be Price is Right, too.
No, Jeopardy.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
Love Jeopardy. That's one that I have always wanted to be on. I took there was a college tournament, group on campus one day, and so I took, the initial one, and I passed that one.
Oh, did you? Nice.
I had to come back and do, another one, and that one I must have not done that well on, so...
Well, at least you tried.
Yeah, that's the closest I was going to get. I still do the online test. I don't know if you know they do an online test.
I think I've heard a friend of mine said he tried it and he didn't get anywhere close. Another friend, I'll let you finish and I'll get to my little anecdote about Jeopardy here.
Well, they don't tell you how you do or anything. You just fill it out and I totally play along at home. There's times when I keep score on my own. I always like people to play along with me, and nobody ever does. But
yeah, I thought of putting Jeopardy on there, but it kind of makes me feel dumb when I watch it. Not gonna lie,
some
of those questions are just I have no idea what they're talking about, and these people know it, like that. It's mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of deflating sometimes, but it is entertaining and it stood the test of time. I think the SNL version might be my favorite part of that. But mm-hmm. no, I actually you mentioned the campus version. I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but they. They held the College Jeopardy in Madison when I was a student there at the Kohl Center, and
filmed it.
Yeah, they filmed the College Edition there at the Kohl Center. And I actually went there twice: once with my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and then once with the Wisconsin band. We actually played kind of before and after and stuff. And I actually got to ask Alex Trebek two questions when I was there. I don't know if you knew this story or not.
I don't think I've heard this.
And
story,
I don't remember the first question I asked him when I just went with my wife and I. But the second time when I was with the band, I asked him what instrument he would play in the band, and he said, you wouldn't want me in your band, or something like that, just kind of alluding that he wouldn't be any good. But so that was kind of surreal. He was kind of cool. He went through the audience in between breaks and whatever and took questions from pretty much all students there. So that was a neat experience. We got there pretty early and got some good seats, too, so that was fun.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, when they were just, they were going to do the college tournament. It might have been, held that year.
Sure.
It might have been that year. I don't really remember what year it was.
Oh, boy. I don't remember. 2008, maybe?
That was it.
Does that sound right?
Yep.
Okay.
They just had, a thing set up, in a student union, hey, come try out for Jeopardy. And they had, a sheet. I think it had 20 questions on it.
Okay.
Originally. And I think I missed, one or two, so I don't know what the threshold was. It was probably pretty high. They don't want too many people.
Sure.
Then I had to go back later in the day and take, I think it was a 100-question test, and there were probably 50 people there.
Okay.
And there was an intro from Trebek.
Oh, cool.
A video. And then they just had all the questions up on the screen, and you followed along, and I never found out exactly how I did.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're up there. Well, probably close. But yeah, it was cool. We had there's a girl from Wisconsin that was on it, Suchita Shaw. Was her name. I still remember that. She worked at the Badger Herald paper where I worked at. So
okay.
The whole crowd kind of rooting for her, which is pretty neat. I had another friend of mine, Ben Vocal. He probably won't mind me sharing this, but he applied for that too, kind of same thing you did. And I think you had to put something interesting about you maybe or something like that, or I can't remember exactly.
Yep.
He listed that he was the most eligible bachelor in Madison, which apparently wasn't good enough to get him on the show, but I thought that was funny.
Oh, that's a shame.
But, so yeah, those are some top game shows. I don't know. I tried out for The Price is Right. I haven't heard back yet. I might have put the wrong phone number since they haven't called me yet. But
that must be it. You should get in touch with
them. Yeah, well, I'll talk to I'll call Drew Carey and see if they can work out that clerical error. But that was a cool mm-hmm. deal they had at the Mall of America, and so kind of got me thinking about that. But yeah. Anyway, a couple minutes left here. Wanted to close. I know Todd, you and I talked about this a little bit before the show, and you had mentioned that you wanted to give this local team some credit, some maybe well-deserved credit for an underrated team in town. the St. Paul Saints, the independent baseball team who have a new ballpark this year. One of the best teams in, I guess, in independent league ball. 45-13 is their record right now. It's pretty impressive.
Uh-huh. They're up 18.5 games, I believe.
Really?
In their division. In their,
holy smokes.
I'll get the exact up-to-the-minute standings here. But yeah, the second place team is like 23-41 or something like that. You know, most people kind of think of the Saints as just like something fun to do. But you know, these are
the pig and all the quirky stuff. Yeah.
Yep. But you know, it's kind of easy to forget these are real guys and, you know, trying to win a championship in whatever league it is that they play in.
And I think you probably know the answer to this, but if not, I'll make you guess anyway. Do you know what former Twin is currently on the St. Paul Saints? Or have I stumped you?
I don't think that. No. I do.
Remember a guy named Pedro Hernandez?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who could forget Pedro? Mm-hmm. He's currently 5-2 with a 3.82 ERA. He's made 12 starts, tied for the most starts on the team. So, yeah, you got something there. But, yeah, I mean, it's impressive to see what they're doing. Actually, last night they set the world record for the largest pillow fight. I think it was around 6,200 people. If I heard correctly, they broke a record that was set at South Dakota State. Was influenced by your South Dakota or San Diego love.
There's only one SDSU.
Yeah, sorry. South Dakota State. They set the record, I think, a year or two ago, and the Saints broke it last night. And you told me you haven't gotten to CHS Field yet, correct?
Not yet. I haven't even been by it.
Yeah, it's. A couple weeks ago, I had the chance to check it out. It was at the farmer's market right across the street, and they had a surprise. They had the gates open for it. You could just walk in, and there's a bunch of people walking in there and just checking it out. And I took a lap around it, and it's a beautiful park. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's really nice, you know, for a minor league park, too, keep in mind. But you go out to the outfield, and if I go to a game, which I hope to go to soon, maybe you and I can podcast from a game or something.
Yeah.
But if I go to a game, I think I'd maybe get either the standing room tickets I think they have, or there's some outfield seats, whatever the outfield view is. But if you go to the left field side and you look down towards downtown St. Paul, it's just a great view. Hmm. So, you know, if you haven't been there yet, I'd recommend checking it out. Did you go to any games at the old stadium?
Yeah, I went to one. It's been a few years. I think 2012. I got some tickets to work, and it's fun. I mean, they got obviously cheap everything.
Yep.
Great beer list. You know,
that's what I've heard. The beer
list
at the current stadium is really nice.
Yeah, I'm sure it's even better than the old place.
A lot of local brews.
Yep. I undersold them a little bit. They're up 20.5 games.
20.5, really?
Second place Winnipeg is 24-33.
So they basically clinched their division, I guess. I don't know how many games they play, to be honest. I should have probably looked that up.
I think they got to be about done, right? I mean, they've played 58.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
I'm not an elite American Association of Independent Professional Baseball mind, which is a mouthful. They should shorten that league name up a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, your St. Paul Saints, and they're by far the best record in the AAOIPB.
That is a mouthful. Mm-hmm. By the way, Wednesday, August 12th, what are you doing that night?
Nothing jumps out.
No, the correct answer is we're going to podcast from the Internet Cat Video Festival 2015 at CHS Field. I just discovered that's being held that night at 6:30. Tickets are $10. I've heard of this Internet Cat Video thing, by the way, the festival. I think it's been in the Twin Cities last year at least, I know for sure.
I believe that's correct.
But anyway, that might be an interesting location for our next podcast. Or not next podcast, but for that podcast on that particular day.
I think that has to happen. Is there going to be a meet and greet? Can you meet the
cat? I don't know. Can we get Grumpy Cat on the podcast,
maybe?
Oh, my
gosh.
That would be pretty cool. I don't know what other cats, Internet cats, we could get, but we got a little bit of time here. We got a couple of weeks.
Well, it features a selection of new videos.
Okay.
Curated by Will Braden, who is the creator of the...
I love that you looked this up, by the way.
Henri Le Chat Noir videos and recipient of the festival's first Golden Kitty Award.
Oh, that's a big honor. It's prestigious.
Mm-hmm. Film critic Roger Ebert called Henri II Paw de Deux the best internet cat video ever made.
That is saying something, especially from Roger
Ebert. Roger
Ebert. I mean, yeah, he knows his cat videos. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
$10. We can get credentials for that.
Oh,
right?
I would imagine they probably put some prime real estate and right around all the cats and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make it happen.
So we'll look forward to bringing some coverage on that to you.
Yeah, August 12th is the Internet Cat Video, and we're gonna try to podcast from it, maybe not, but next week we will not be podcasting from there. I don't know, to be determined location, but We've enjoyed doing this. This has been fun. This is round number two over the latest T3 Sports. Anything else you want to shout out to the good people before we hit the road here?
I think that about does it for me. I appreciate everybody, you know, chiming in on Twitter. Please, you know, keep on doing that. And please, you know, look out for all the questions that we'll have on there for you. If you want to contribute any questions or comments, you know, feel free to send them our way.
I want to give a quick shout out, and you're going to love this, to the Wisconsin band. I saw today they played there was a woman in Madison who was getting cancer treatment, had her last radiation. Her dream was to have a marching band escort her or meet her after she left the hospital, and they did that. As a Wisconsin band alum, I think that's pretty cool. And even I think as a Gopher band alum, you can agree that's pretty cool.
You found a Wisconsin thing I can't hate.
See,
on.
Exactly. Playing music for cancer patients. That's everybody can agree. That's a good thing. So that's my quick shout out of this. But I wanted to say thanks to everybody for listening. Be sure to catch us on Twitter. Again, Todd is at Word of Todd, Todd with two D's. I am at Tyler Mason 21. And this podcast and anything we feel like tweeting about it or promoting it or whatever is at T3 Sports. You can find us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/T3Sports. Send us an email at T3SportsRadio@gmail.com. Otherwise, we hope you tune in next time, and thanks everybody for listening.